Welcome to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Catskill region. Well, today on Health Center, I'm going to talk about what's happening with healthcare for children in the United States with Dr. Raji Kopalu, a pediatric nurse practitioner who is the manager of Advanced Practice Professional Development at the Stanford Children's Health. It's not a pretty picture. But first, artificial intelligence, AI, as we say now, is already upending our world. It's already being used in healthcare in a variety of ways, including for interpreting x-rays and other imaging, approaches, flagging potential concerns that a clinician may overlook, and supporting diagnostic decision-making. There have been suggestions that robots and AI could even replace nurses. Needless to say, there are a lot of concerns within the nursing community, and there should be in the public community, about how AI is used in healthcare. The American Academy of Nursing recently issued a position statement on artificial intelligence in healthcare, and here to talk with us about this is Dr. Deborah Barksdale, President of the American Academy of Nursing and Dean of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro School of Nursing. Deborah, thank you so much for joining me on Health Cetera today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, and just for transparency purposes, I am a fellow in the American Academy of Nursing and a past president. I do have a bit of a bias about the Academy. I think it does fabulous work. But Deborah, why don't we start by you telling people who may not be aware of the Academy what it is and what it does.
Well, thank you, and I would love to. So the Academy is an honorific society and a policy organization. So our members are called fellows, like you, and these fellows represent nurses' most accomplished leaders in policy, research, administration, practice, and academia. We have over 3,300 fellows currently in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and 42 countries. The Academy's mission is to improve health and to achieve health equity by impacting policy through nursing leadership, nursing innovation, and nursing science.
So how does the Academy decide what issues it's going to take on? And then how did it take on this issue of AI in healthcare?
Well, we first develop a strategic plan, which we know things are always changing. But this has
an understatement.
This has become such an important issue that the Academy really felt that it needed to do something, to put out something that would serve as a guide. So it was probably, I think, in 2024. When the board, the Academy's board, began our work to examine not only AI through the nursing lens, but also looking at upcoming federal policy decisions, and really thought we needed to look at this and try to create a roadmap for advocacy.
Mm. And again, to reiterate that the Academy has some of the top nurse scientists in the country in it, people like
yes.
you who are deans, other faculty, leading clinicians, chief nurse executives. So it's really people who are paying attention and have deep expertise and knowledge about and are thinking about these issues. So I'm
absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm
absolutely.
You were hearing then, were you, from people in the Academy?
Absolutely. And then the board decided we need to convene our fellows.
Mm-hmm.
So just like you mentioned, we have fellows that are these experts across many aspects of nursing and healthcare. So we look for fellows who had direct expertise in AI, and that was things like data governance, bioethics, health equity, interoperability, all of those things, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. We looked at our fellows who were experts and convened a working group from those.
I want to drill down on some of the specifics in this statement that the Academy has issued, but give us sort of the high level, what some of the takeaways or key points of this report are.
Oh, gosh, let's see. Where do we start? So I think some of the most salient points related to AI from the perspective of the Academy is that we believe that there must be responsible and ethical use of AI. And it is transformative, we know, in healthcare. But it should. But we need to really focus on this ethical and responsible use rather than trying to supplant human wisdom and nursing clinical judgment, or any clinical judgment for that matter. And so within this context and adding to the body of work for many nurses engaged in AI oversight and integration, the Academy has identified privacy, protection, transparency, and literacy as key priorities. And we really believe that nurses have a vital role in shaping how AI is designed, how it is governed, how it is implemented, and also how it is evaluated.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to drill down on this. What are some of the ethical issues that you address in the report? I think they're really important.
So we talk about many ethical issues. For example, while we see improvements based on research, there's traditionally been a lack of emotional involvement in AI decision-making. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that AI decision-making does not exclude that human oversight. And we know that AI is based on algorithms, so ones and zeros, I'm told. And so that can that can create other issues and bias related to specifically, I wanted to just, talk about some of the regulations that I have put in place. And as I gather my note here, we really want to just make sure that we are not discriminating against people in terms of race, gender, ethnicity, all of those things that were included in Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, which prohibited those things. We also know that in 2024, a new rule developed that included protections against discrimination from patient care decision support tools, which include AI-enabled technologies. Mm-hmm. So these are probably some of the things, these biases that people don't necessarily think of, but we know that the technologies themselves, how they are built, can reflect underlying historical biases.
Yes.
They could be based on samples that were, or data that was too small, or it was inadequate and may not necessarily represent the overall population.
You know, you're really raising a good point, and I think it speaks to how people should be thinking about using AI. I know that when I use it and I get something back from AI, I raise a question, I get something back from them, I always check the sources, because sometimes the sources are lousy. You don't want to use the information from the sources they use. And what you brought up about algorithms being based on historic biases and inaccuracies, I know there's an example, and I'm not recalling the details, maybe you will, about kidney disease among people who are Black and the extent to which a screening test or an assessment test was biased against Black people being able to get the treatment they needed. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah, I don't recall the specific details of that, but that is a perfect example of something that we need to be aware of could happen.
Yeah.
And if I can just give a little tiny example, even before AI was all that we know it to be today, I used to go, I am a African-American woman, and I used to go to the bathrooms and airports or places of that nature, and I could never get that sensor to work to give me water. And I was like, what is going on here? And this has been years ago, but I did do some research that showed even that kind of technology was not sensitive to skin tones of certain people.
Wow, I had no idea.
So, yes. So I hope it's better now. Usually I do get some water and can wash my hands. But but that's just an example of the scope. And now we're in a totally different stratosphere with AI from that kind of technology. And we just want to be careful that we are making sure that when we are making clinical decisions, that we are basing it on good data, using good sound human judgment, and not just relying on essentially a machine to tell us what to do.
So there are a lot of people who are concerned about the privacy of their data, and you mentioned that the report does address the issue of privacy. What are the issues there around privacy and AI?
Well, privacy is a concern, a valid concern, and the use of AI in healthcare and research brings the potential for new types of security threats and for data exposure. For example, if a person's health records are inappropriately used as a source of data for an AI model, this creates the risk of data exposure. Mm. And as AI becomes increasingly more embedded in healthcare, transparency and explainability become even more crucial. Mm. And so, yeah.
No, go ahead.
So trust in these AI tools, then, is not only about their accuracy and their ability to you know, discriminate or not, but it's also about their ability to provide this clear, understandable data that we can trust will be safe and not expose us to external vulnerabilities.
So tell me about any recommendations that address this. What can we do to ensure that our data remains private, if that's of concern to us? I believe when I go to most healthcare visits these days, I have to sign a form about the organization making my data available. And sometimes they'll say, you know, it's not with any identifiers, but you know, there are lots of ways you can identify people without names and social security numbers. And so I don't agree to those terms. But are there other recommendations that people should be thinking about?
Yeah, so I'm going to share some policy level actions that we think should happen. And then I'm going to share some individual level things that, that people should be asking and checking. So at the policy level, we recommend revisiting HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And we believe that this is vital. And it also should include the two parts, the HIPAA privacy rules and the HIPAA security rule. And this statement makes recommendations on including the HIPAA security rule to incorporate contemporary cybersecurity frameworks and increasing standards on the HIPAA privacy rule to require transparent disclosure of data sharing arrangements between the clinician and the individual. So I said all that to say is that we believe that policy needs some work in light of contemporary circumstances to really be updated and to address some of the things that are happening now that maybe weren't happening at the time.
Let me just insert here for our listeners that HIPAA is, Dr. Barksdale said what it was, but it, for healthcare providers, the thing that really is pounded into us is that you cannot violate the privacy of a patient. I cannot tell you about a patient I am even seeing. I can't tell you I'm seeing as a clinician. Deborah Barksdale is a patient of mine. I can't do that. I can't give that information. And if a healthcare provider has violated or somehow disclosed information about you, you can actually bring charges against that clinician. And so there are some ways that you can protect the privacy of your information with healthcare providers, but this AI takes it to another level, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It absolutely does. And we're seeing some actions in almost all the states related to AI and rules and regulations, even around who, for example, who can call themselves one type of professional or another. An example is in Oregon in 2025, they established a law prohibiting non-human entities such as an AI-enabled agent from using the title nursing.
Yes.
So there are it's unbelievable that you would have a AI representing themselves as a nurse. So that's one. So Oregon passed a rule about that. And then in Utah as well, they adopted an AI Policy Act, which places oversight on regulated occupations is what they call it. And those occupations that require a license or certificate, like nursing, and to disclose the use of generative AI before communicating with patients orally or in writing. So that would help you. Like, you need to know when you're talking to your provider, with information that they have come up with, maybe AI enhanced or clarified, but that they came up with it and it wasn't just the AI responding back to you. Utah has a unique pilot program going on right now called Doctronic. And it's a pilot program to allow AI to legally prescribe routine medication refills.
Wow.
So
that's amazing. How do you do that? I mean, it really suggests that it doesn't require anything other than looking at what's available on the web to know whether medication is okay for a person.
Well, it does have a regulatory sandbox that's with that, and but your listeners should know that things like that are happening. So, but it is our responsibilities as consumers of health, as patients, as clients, whatever we want to call ourselves, to not be afraid of the AI and how people are using it, but to understand how it's being used, when it's being used, and I suggest people even just play around with it to see the power of it. We also know that there are people who can't afford traditional health care who are also using AI and using chatbots to get their health information. And in a recent survey, it reported that 1 out of 3 are turning to these AI chatbots for health information. And that's about the same as the number of people who get their health information from social media.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I think you're raising a really good point, that there is good that AI can bring to the clinical setting and help clinicians. And I think this idea of having AI read first or do a first read of an x-ray or some other image, whether an MRI or what have you, before it's viewed by the physician, the radiologist, what have you, makes sense to me. It's sort of like, here's what AI looks at, but it might, you know, who knows? It might bias the clinician to miss other things. I don't know. I think your point about we have to pay attention not say we shouldn't use it. It's here. It's going to be with us even more so in the future. But we need to pay attention to the pros and cons and fix those things that aren't working, as well as, you know, the point you really raised early on, paying attention to the human side of healthcare. If we lose sight of that, it's really about relationships. It is about sometimes, as nurses, we even say we can just look at a patient and intuitively have this gut sense about what's happening with that patient. And you don't want to lose that, I don't think.
Absolutely. It's those as observable factors of those cues. As I was preparing for this, I was thinking of times in my life when I have looked at a patient and just said, something is not right. Yeah. And I don't know if, and then it turns out to be the case. And I don't know, at this point at least, if AI can do that. And that's what I believe nurses bring, and that's why I don't think the nurses, AI will replace nurses, because we need that critical thinking. We need the observations and the cues. Some call it intuition. I call it it's just training based on patterns, and mm-hmm. so we learn. But that human connection is so vital. And AI, at least not at this point, that can do that. So.
Yeah, and thank you for clarifying that, because I said, you know, intuition, but we know from Patricia Benner's work, who is a nurse scientist based in California, who's looked at ways of knowing and how we know what we know and levels of competence in nursing. And the expert level nurse is that one who has what I just called intuition, but it's really based on having deep experience as well as knowledge, didactic knowledge, but deep experience that is informing. Your brain's doing something with it, and you just know when you walk in the room and look at somebody that something's not right here. And it's really important for what we say, rescuing people from going down the tubes, so to speak. So we have a little bit of time left, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to highlight any other points in the report or any other recommendations that you think the public really needs to pay attention to.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing I want to talk about, I often hear people are asking, so you're a dean, so what are you doing? What are you all teaching these people? And so I am a dean, and we do use AI to help teach our students, but maybe not in the way that you think. And I started out early on a few years ago by appointing a group of faculty that I call my AI champion. These were the people that I wanted them to learn everything they could possibly learn about AI to bring back to share with those that might have been a little skeptical at the time. And we know AI is everywhere, every day. So how we tend to use it is to, first of all, make sure faculty are using it and understanding it, but using it in the classes instead of prohibiting students from using AI, incorporating it into their assignments and their learning, but also having them to critique the AI, critique the responses, critique the sources. What did it miss? What did it get right? What did it get wrong? What can we do better? So that way we hope we're instilling that responsible, ethical use of AI in them as well, so they can not only just use it, but critique it and not just blindly follow AI and lose their critical judgment, their clinical judgment, their critical thinking, and all of that. So we're really emphasizing AI fluency, AI literacy, which is what I encourage for your listeners as well. Not that they will know everything, but they know enough to critique it and ask the questions of those that are providing the care, or however they may encounter AI.
So, Dr. Deborah, let me ask you this question. So do you assume that your students are using AI to write their papers?
Yes, that was my very next statement. I was going to say,
Sorry.
We are not naive. We know that our students are using it, and they're using it when the faculty are not. And so, yes, and they're figuring this stuff out. So we got to continue to work with them and use it, but use it in an ethical way. And never forget that, you know, the human part is necessary in all that we do in healthcare.
It's really a challenging time, isn't it? But an interesting one in terms of this AI in healthcare.
It absolutely is. I understand the fears. I understand the frustrations. And I just hope that people always continue to think. To think first. To try the brain first.
Yeah. Well, and if people would like to see this report, how can they do so?
This report can be found on the Academy's website, and that's aannet.org, so aannet.org. And also, the Academy will have an upcoming policy dialogue this spring, and it's all about the Academy's AI policy, and the task force. We'll have members from the task force that help put it together. I sat on all of those meetings. It was fascinating because we had lots of experts from all kinds of areas to come talk to us before we even put anything to paper to make sure we understood. But yes, the website, and also you can find information about this policy dialogue on our website, and we would welcome having people join us for that discussion.
I didn't know that the policy dialogues were open to the public. That is, they are?
That is what my team has said.
Great.
So, and they said, tell you to keep an eye
Great.
Out for this announcement. So,
great.
I think it's open. There may be a little fee, but if it is, it's not much.
Okay. Well, I will certainly share that with our listeners when it's available. I'm assuming I get all of the, what we call fan mail, emails from the Academy, and, I'll look forward to receiving that and share it with our listeners. Well, I want to thank you so much. I've been talking with Dr. Deborah Barksdale. She is president of the American Academy of Nursing and dean of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro School of Nursing. Thank you so much, Dr. Barksdale, for coming on to Health Center and the Catskills today.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.